All right. Here we go. Welcome to High-Minded, Seeking Righteousness. And this is the second part of our four-part series on love. And as I mentioned in the first part, there are four types of love. I mean, we talk about love in English, and we have one word to describe how we love our family and how we love our friends and how we love our significant others and ultimately how we love God or how he loves us, these different types of love. But in English, we just have this generic word love that we use across the board. And it's really just about this feeling, again, that definition, an intense feeling of deep affection, which is how we very blanketly attach the word love to, and it limits us. It stifles us in our understanding or what we accept as love. So we talked about the four. There's storge, philia. Storge was the previous one. That's that familial love, the love for your family. Familiar, it's also the love you have for your dogs and the love that dogs have for you. And so we know this is a biological love that comes along with being a parent or being a family member or having this familiarity with a person or an animal. And then there's philia, which we're going to talk about, is that brotherly love or that camaraderie, really, that it's beyond companionship, but friendship. Friendship is what it is, and you can see the word in Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, philia. The way to remember that is that that camaraderie, that brotherly love or sisterly love or whatever the case may be, depending on who you are. And then there's eros, which is, of course, from, you can see the origins of the word erotic and that romantic love, that love for your significant other. And then agape, which is God's love, the most powerful love. And that need be involved in all of these. And you'll see why the significance of that love being involved. We already talked about some of the shortcomings and the nature of storge. Now with philia, it's that friendship, camaraderie that you have with others that it's often less significant than the other loves, at least as far as people see. It's not a main course, as C.S. Lewis says. It's kind of something that's off to the side. Everybody focuses on that love you have for your family, that love you have for your significant other. But the love that you have for your friends is a very unique love, and it's often not even perceived as a true love in the way it is. But I do have friends that I have that relationship with that I say, love you, brother, love you, man. And I have friends that say that to me. And in the world, it's very difficult, specifically for men, to express those things to others because it may be misinterpreted as these others, because we only have one word. We only have one way to say it. Whereas if we could break these things up, it would be more specifically. But this love, this philia, if we were using that term, I feel you, brother, it might make things a little bit more specific. And there is the problems with, people talk about masculine toxicity or toxic masculinity. I was listening to another podcast where that came up and how men have to have this specific presentation of being a tough guy. I know, here's the thing, amongst Marines and amongst the military, there's more of that. It's more easily to say, I love you, brother, because they're confident. We know that it's not an issue, again, as a corpsman. This is things that you say, like they'll say, I love you, brother, and they got no problem hugging each other. And I think that that comes from a lot of insecurities in men and is often perceived as weakness by men that are maybe insecure in that aspect. So there is issues with that. Now, these other loves are face-to-face for the most part. But the similarity between philia and storge, the familiar love, the family love, and the brotherly love, is that it's side-by-side. If you wanted to put a metaphor of how these people are standing together, whereas eros is face-to-face, and even with God, it's both face-to-face and side-by-side. But with philia, that camaraderie, it's side-by-side. You're going on the same direction. And philia can evolve. And it's a, you know, just as storge is a fantastic mixer, philia is also a fantastic mixer, and it can evolve into eros and it can be a good foundation for it. It's not required. There are people that were not friends before they became romantically involved, and it just becomes that way. They just are friends and lovers at the same time, and that's included in Eros. In Eros, you have that. Excuse me. So again, it can evolve into that romantic love. Another thing about philia is it involves others. Typically with storge, you know, your relationship with your children or your relationship with your parents is a one-on-one type of relationship. The way you feel about your mother may be different than the way you feel about your father, and the way you feel about your son may be different than the way you feel about your daughter, the way you feel about your grandchild A or grandchild B or your sister or your brother, all very different. These biological relationships, these familiar relationships or familial relationships. But philia includes others and is often the more the merrier, versus, again, Eros is definitely a one-on-one. But philia, this brotherly love, this friendship, is the more the merrier, the more people that you can have involved. And ultimately, the strongest forms of friendship are these groups of friends, this team. And that can be used for evil. Again, these aspects of love are so powerful that they need to be handled appropriately. They need to be given the respect that they deserve, because they're not, love is not like anything else that we face in the world. It is very unique. It is very powerful. It is the greatest of these precepts and virtues on this road to righteousness. Now, it's also, unfortunately, the least natural of these loves. With primarily storge is biological for the most part, or it's this familiar thing. It's a very natural love. It happens over time. Whereas friendship is, there's nothing biological or chemical about it. It's a choice. It's something we choose, or it is something that can happen. It's a personal thing, but you choose. You can spend who to spend time with and who not to spend time with. So it has a very unique freedom to it, or personal choice to it, that storge does not. You know, you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your family. This is the difference. This is kind of a difference between storge, the familial love, and philia, the brotherly love here. In ancient times, friendship was associated with nobility and with the angels, with angelic behavior. It was highly regarded because people would lend their sword to die for someone by choice, out of respect for who this person was personally, who they were as a human being. And that's where this friendship, this philia love comes from, that makes it unique. There is also that in the Eros side, but, and you can see where things evolve. Often a friendship becomes a romantic relationship because of this nobility and this strong connection that develops over time. Now, we can see the origins of this stuff, or we can presume the origins of this stuff, because men and women have primarily, it used to be thought, and again, in C.S. Lewis's time, he'd focus on the friendships between men and men, and the friendships between men and women, or women and women. But of course, these relationships can be culturally, you know, cultural basis on these, because we're brought up into certain things. But let's say ancient times, or even Native American times, so we don't go into the caveman period. But in these olden times where we've got Native Americans, the men would go hunting and gathering. And as such, they'd have to work together. They'd have to communicate. They'd have to talk. Natural friendships, this natural love for each other, doing these things together would come up. And the same thing with women learning and teaching each other how to do the things that they were doing. If we're using Native American society, tribal society, they would sow the seeds, they would plant the seeds, remain the harvest, raise the children, maintain the community back home, and they'd work together. And these things would bring about this love, this filial love with each other through this interaction. Now, there's an expression that Lewis uses, that cave people doubtfully had a club on their shoulder. but they certainly most likely had a club where they met with other people. So after these guys would go out hunting, or these women would spend the day and they'd be done with their work, they'd come back and they'd eat together. And they'd talk about things, they'd tell stories, and they'd discuss their beliefs, spiritual beliefs, and their techniques for various things, and they'd work together on these things. And they would discuss things, and it would bring them together. It would be a natural course of action that these things that they did together would bring them together. And that's the start of it, typically, but that's not how it would evolve into some filial love. Now, just because you went out hunting with someone didn't mean you were necessarily friends with them. There, because this filial love, it means you were companions, but you were not friends. And there's the difference. So we often will have a lot of friends or a lot of companions, but very few true friends. And there are people that you don't have that. There are people that just have companions that feel no love, or they don't feel any of this relationship. They have no friendships. They only have a lot of companions, people they work with, or people they do this or that with, but they don't have that friendship that ultimately comes, this love, from the evolution or the time spent in this relationship. This brotherly love often can produce also the least pain and the most pleasure. It's often because it's innocent and it's light. There's no responsibility with it. You're not obligated to this person in any way. You have no expectations of them. And you're doing recreational things with them for the most part. You're enjoying each other's company, but you're enjoying the person. So it becomes this pleasant thing, the good without the bad for the most part. And it's not universally, because as the relationship, whenever any love comes into play, even this brotherly love, there are obstacles and there are problems and pitfalls to watch out for if you don't incorporate that very love, that true love, the love of God, the behavior of love. Without the behavior of love, all of these can become significant problems. But with the behavior of love, you can find it fills in the missing parts on all these imperfect loves, if you will. So because of that light nature of it, I mean, a friend is often used to describe, as I said, though, we'll say that, you know, a companion, somebody that we work with, oh, he's a friend of mine. But in fact, that's not. It's a façon de parler. Pardon my French, but it's a figure of speech. It's something that we're using again generically when it's really just a companion. You spend company, you have company with them when you're at work or when you're doing these things. And it's not what we're talking about when we're talking about true friendship. And I think the distinction lies in, say, you may like a person's jokes, or you may like the way they speak, their intelligence, versus liking the person. And I know these people. I know that, like, I remember you'll hit it off. I remember someone that we were in core school, Navy core school, and we saw each other and we just started laughing. It was a friend of mine. I won't use any names on here, but we just started laughing, me and this girl, like at miscellaneous things around. And we liked each other's behavior. We liked each other's personality. And that's the thing that's different. You like the person's personality. Philia is about liking their personality and loving their personality and connecting with them on that. But no real obligations or expectations other than, I like this person just because of who they are. And they like me. And it has nothing to do with their background. You don't know whether they're married. You don't know whether they have a family. You don't know the crap they've been through. You don't know anything other than, I like this person. And they like you too. And it's one of those things that are very... So for example, like, you may like a book, right? You read the book, but you don't like the author necessarily. Or you may like a movie, or you may like an actor, but you don't like actually, or you may like a character, but you don't like the actor. You don't even know the actor, really. but it's very light and loose. And that's more like companionship versus friendship. When you know the person, or at least when you learn their personality, you like their personality, you like the person, that's where you start to go down this road to this brotherly love. With a companion, you get another difference you can see. With somebody who's a companion, somebody that like you used to work with or something, when you guys meet up after a certain period of time, it's awkward and it's uncomfortable and you're sitting there, nobody's talking and you're talking about the weather and there's nobody's laughing or anything like that. It's even difficult to share much with them of any import in your life because it's awkward. But with somebody who's a friend, somebody you've had this brotherly love with, and I know and people know, time can pass and you haven't seen each other or spoken and whatever, but it's like you can just pick up right where you left off. And, you know, it's hugs and it's how are you and it's smiles and it's good. Now, people often don't even know how to handle that, that type of brotherly, sisterly love. But still, that's usually a good indication that this person you have this genuine brotherly, sisterly love for is that neither time nor distance, you pick up right where you left off. Companions are most often based on like shared circumstance, people you work with, you know, I used to do this, but friendship comes out of that. It's a requirement for this friendship, for this this brotherly love. And I'm just going to call it friendship, because what we're talking about, most people have companions, or they have, you know, this is a companion of mine, acquaintances, a lot of people use, but really companion. You had company together, you work together, whatever, this is my companion, this is my companion, but there's very few people in that we should use the word friend with, or friendship, this true loving friendship, and these are based on these type of ways to identify or identifiers to determine how important that relationship is mutually, because it is important that you set the stage that if you do feel this philia, this brotherly, sisterly love for someone, that you behave in such a way. If you don't behave in that way, then you lose out on potentially that being reciprocated and being a reciprocal and mutual relationship. So Montaigne said, a man is my friend because he is he, because I am I. A man is my friend because he is he, because I am I. These things, you are friends because of who you are, your personality, not because of any obligations to each other, not because of a tit for tat, I do this in exchange for that, and so on and so forth. A friendship just happens because of that. And this is also shared with Eros, the Eros love. This is not the case in the Storge love, where this love is there because you're born into it and familiarity comes along. And unfortunately, familiarity also breeds contempt, which you can see in those relationships. But both Eros, the romantic love, and Philia, the brotherly love, both are because of just who you are. No obligations, no expectations, but Eros does have more to it to maintain a healthy relationship versus true philia, which is you do you, I do me, and we just like each other. It's cool. We like hanging out. It's not about what we do for each other. We've got shared interests and so on and so forth. And one of the differences between it is Eros will say that this person is my goal. They're my journey's end. They're my key and lock, my thirst water, whatever example you want to use. This person that I have this romantic love for is my goal, and they are my journey's end. Whereas Philia, the brotherly love, says we have the same goal. Me and this person have the same goal, and we're on the same journey. It's that instead of being face-to-face like Eros, it's side-by-side. And that's, you can see a good metaphor there with that. For example, I do have friends, and I referenced this earlier in one of the earlier podcasts where I had a friend, or I have two friends, but they're both mutual friends of mine, that their relationship started to get inflicted with what, and this can happen with this philia relationship, and I felt it happen, this brotherly love, this friendship, where the expectations of storge, where they start to blend this relationship, this friendship that's become so close, into this family type love, which people say, oh, you're like a real brother or real like sister or whatever. No, I mean, there's damage there. You don't want to necessarily go into that and merge it that way, because the expectation comes in that the love has certain is going to be there. Or there's another thing where really one of the real pitfalls here for philia is that if you don't do this, and this is different from storge, but it does share a similarity with the romantic love, is that the expectation that if you don't do this, then you don't love me, then you're not a friend. And that's not what friendship is about. Friendship should not have the expectations. It should not have the responsibility associated with it that we think. It should be, it's intended to be this free and this by choice type of relationship that has no obligations. Now, those obligations do come, but it shouldn't be there. And these, I've seen relationships, friendships, damaged because one person says, well, I expect you to do this for me because I would do this for you. These things should come, and if you don't receive those things and you expect those things, then it becomes very difficult. It may not be. It's a different type of thing. It may be a polluted version of friendship where, you know, any of these loves are subject to attack from evil intentions, from selfish motives, from, wanting someone to do and be whatever you want them to be. Instead of the intention of friendship, this true love or this true friendship, this aspect of love for friendship, where it's this person is who they are. And no matter who they are, I like them that much. And I am who I am, and they like me that much. And that's the basis for our friendship. So it becomes a very specific thing. And companionship is where it starts. You have to have some shared interests for the most part. C.S. Lewis says, companionship is the soil from which friendships grow. It's the soil from which friendships grow. And that means that you start out as companions for the most part. And I'm sure you understand, people will often say, we're friends, we met here. I met a lot of my friends in the military. I met a lot of my friends at the bar. I met a lot of my friends at work. I met a lot of my friends at school. You meet them at these various places. And it's companions, you just have those. You know, there's a bunch of companions in there you met at school. But then there's those friends, those people that you have shared interest with, that you have the same desires, the same hopes, fears, interests. Those are often the things, those are the seeds that take companionship and turn them into friendship. And you could have those typically and should be in your life isolated to a limited few. Because you'll see as we go talk a little bit more about this brotherly love, which I do share, this brotherly and sisterly love, these friendships with these people, that I do say I love you when I get off the phone with them. Love you, brother. I love you, sister. Good talking to you. There are people, and they know this about me because I share interests. I share hopes. I share fears and desires. There are things that we have in common, and there are ties that bind us beyond just this regular companionship. But the first step to all friendships, for the most part, is a shared activity, a shared locality, maybe, something in common where you're in the same area, where you can get to know this person, where you can begin to like this person, where you can even find out that you have shared interests and shared desires. And one of the great illustrations I've seen of this was you could see that these Native Americans, hunters and gatherers, they'd go out hunting, they'd all come back, and you know, they're dressing the kills, and they're stripping the kills, and they're getting them ready to eat, and they're preparing, and they're laughing and hanging out. And then two of the guys, you know, after they're eating or whatever, would go start talking and painting on the stone there, and another guy would come over and he'd be painting with him. Now, these two guys were different than the other. Not that they weren't all part of that same, but they had a very unique and similar thing that bound them together. They both started to, they liked art, and they would create, and they wouldn't really speak much, but they knew. They did talk, ultimate talk a lot, and they'd create and they'd hang out. And then they'd talk about techniques and they'd talk about things that were specific to them that they couldn't speak about with any of the other guys in the tribe. And you can see how that becomes a friendship. Well, they're all companions and they all treat each other well. This is not to preclude that you treat your companions or anyone with hostility or you don't treat them kindly. But this relationship over here with these two guys became a strong friendship. They had a bond in their common interest of art, of creating art, of something different than the other guys. And that bound them together. So you can see how these shared activities are paramount to starting true friendships. And people do know this, and sometimes one person will want to force another person into a shared activity. They'll want to say, hey, come do this, or they'll want to take their friendship and evolve it into something else that the other person wants. And these are things that can destroy true friendships when you're not on the same, going to the same mission. You're not on the same journey. You don't have the same goal. And this is really difficult with relationships between men and women, where maybe the man wants to have a romantic relationship with his friend, and he's going along and doing all these things, but the woman does not. In fact, she only enjoys the man's company and wants that friendship. Now, that changes this friendship, and it starts to break it. Now, you don't have the same goal. Now, one person wants a romantic relationship and the other person is just seeking friendship. And at that point, it does damage. And I do have seen these again in relationships as well, where these expectations or these desires for one thing or another, and they'll often be forced. And it can go both ways. It can be the woman who wants a romantic relationship with the man and vice versa. And they'll try to force this instead of receiving only what they can. And I've struggled with it, where I've been in friendships where maybe I've wanted more, and I've also been on the other side where maybe the woman wanted more than I want. And those things will damage and destroy potentially good relationships, good friendships, because you'll sacrifice the friendship for the selfish motive that you want, which is why when you find yourself in a friendship with someone that you are attracted to or somebody that you want more, it need be addressed as soon as possible so that either you can say, I have no interest in this friendship, I only wanted a romantic relationship, or I will take the friendship because if that's what I can get, that's valuable to me as well. And I'm going to stop right there for a moment for a break as we go into this next section. And as I said, the music's going to carry on, then it'll start up again. And I'll meet you on the other side here. And we'll continue on with brotherly love, with friendship on the next side. So continuing on, here's where we left off on, we were talking about philia and that friendship love. So people, it's a man is my friend because he is he and because I am I. It's about who each others are, not because you want to change the other person. It's because of their personality. And we were talking about people being on the same goal, having the same goal and being on the same journey together versus Eros, which is you are my goal and you are my journey's end. You're on the same path. We talked about companionship being the soil from which friendships grow. Now, we were talking about shared activities and how those could be forced, which is a real issue. But the second part of that friendship love is that the best friendships are unsought. They're unasked for. Specifically, these friendships, for the most part, just happen. They just come into being. And that's what this friendship is about. They are, you can choose the person and you can choose not to invest in the friendship. The other loves, or where, you know, you choose it, Storge or Eros, where Storge, you have no choice. Your family is your family and you don't have any choice. And that's why people will often say, oh, well, they're expected to behave a certain way, or I expect them to be a certain way, and that gives them some excuse for not treating them with the behavior of love, or they're not treating me with the behavior of love, which is that part of that agape, that godly love or that Christian love, which is patience, kindness, understanding, and we'll get to that and how that all incorporates into all of these, but specifically dealing with that brotherly love. And for the most part, friends don't often discuss their friendship unless they're under duress. I mean, it's not something you're talking about like, oh, or you're showing. It's not expressed visibly for the most part when you're out, whereas Eros or Storge, you'll see, you know, giving the kiss on the cheek or the kiss on the forehead, or Eros holding hands or holding your kids' hands. You can see that these things are shown, whereas friendship for the most part is implicit. It's not specifically expressed outward. And you'll see that people under duress, soldiers specifically, brothers in arms, will feel these things. And it's manifested in its results rather than its expressions, meaning that you can see that someone will catch someone's back, or they'll be there for them, or they'll help them, and you'll see the results of their friendship there. That's how you'll know their friends, not in their the expression through kisses or hugs or hand-holding. You know, sometimes, and specifically with brothers in arms, and they'll be hugging and that sort of thing when they see each other as a form of expression. But also, bereavement, though, is not often expressed as strong as it is in Storge. I mean, a soldier will be there, or you'll lose a friend and you'll go, and you won't necessarily come to tears and break down and have the strong, even though some philia, some of this friendship, people will go over the top with, but naturally it's not that same way. And when people use their friends for these sort of things, unless it's to honor the fallen or to remember someone, which often is appropriate under heroic circumstances to remember, to honor someone's memory, is that you honor their great life. You don't want to pump up these things or puff up these people unless there's something worth a memorable note for. But the loss of the friend may impoverish us every day and every year and every month that we're without them. Someone that you've seen every day and you've had this recreational behavior with can often be akin to the loss of a limb. So for example, if there's someone that you used to always play basketball with every day and you would learn and they were a great friend of yours, and you lose that friend, it would be akin to losing a limb because, well, there's no more playing basketball with them anymore. You lose these recreational activities. If you went and you had a beer with them at the bar every Sunday, well, you'd lose that. You'd lose that recreational activity, and it can be significant in that regard. So quite often, you'll find that this friendship, this loss of friendship, can be like losing a limb because you lose this aspect of something, this recreational, even if it's conversations that you've had with these people, you'll lose them and you'll feel that while it may not continue to hurt, you still feel the loss. It may not bring you to tears on a regular basis. When you lose your arm, there's no more basketball, or when you lose your leg, there's no more mountain climbing. When you lose this friend, there's no more basketball, or there's no more mountain climbing with them. There's no more of that relationship, that friendship that you had. The importance of philia is often masked, this friendship is often masked by its value. The very thing that makes it significant is the thing that makes it look insignificant. It is unnecessary. There are people that can go without friends or without friendship for their life. This is not something that is required by us. It's not something that we need in our life, although there is value to it. This is a thing of choice, which makes it, again, in similarity to Eros on that, or to that romantic love, it's a thing of choice. Now, romantic love does have, there are these things that happen, and the best of these relationships just happen. And that's what you want. You don't expect them. They just come out of nowhere, and bam, I like this person. This dude is a cool dude, and I want to hang out with him. I enjoy his company. Or that connection with that woman that just happens and you don't know where it's come from, and it makes you a different person, or it enhances your happiness or enhances your life. And they enhance our life and they assist us in achieving our goals. They motivate us. But it's not due to anything other than the person. It's a free choice. It's something that is not like family, who can or cannot. They may discourage you, they may encourage you, hopefully, but these are people that we choose to have in our life. And being free like that, it has a sense of irresponsibility, which is value, as it should be. That's the value of these relationships. We're not responsible, we're not beholden in any way to these people. We enjoy when we can get together and have a cigarette maybe, or smoke. I think about On the Road, Jack Kerouac, where these great intellects would sit around and they would discuss high-minded issues or concepts, these things that are beyond, and discuss, you know, feelings, and they'd argue and they'd go back and forth, and they wouldn't necessarily walk out being on the same page, but they enjoyed their time, they enjoyed the exchange of ideas, and they enjoyed the back and forth and the camaraderie that comes along with friendship. Now, let's be clear, leaving any person in need, if somebody's on the ground and you're walking past and they need a hand up and you leave them there, that's bad. But leaving a friend in need is worse. And it's because of this camaraderie, and it's because of this, the dynamic of this relationship, that you're brought to the point where, now this is not an obligation. This is not necessary. Although it's not what friendship is about, it's not about having to, you know, especially if people find themselves in one-sided relationships where they're either constantly doing for someone or they're doing with an expectation. Once you add this responsibility or these requirements into the dynamic, it becomes a weight on friendship, and it becomes a burden, and it can do damage. But this behavior is a byproduct of your friendship. This ability, that's why it's worse if you leave a friend, because it should be, as your friendships develop, when it gets to these points, you should not be able to leave them down. You should have to almost innately pick them up. But the value of that friendship is when push comes to shove, there's no obligation for recompense. Meaning it's that, don't mention it. And sometimes you'll give each other the business, like, you owe me on one of it, but there should be no real obligation. It should be, I've done this for you because you're my friend, right? Of course I'm going to do it. I don't want to lose my buddy. I don't want to lose my basketball companion. I don't want to lose my social companion. This person who I like their personality. Friendship's based on who someone is. Their personality. You don't have to be, if you're friends with somebody, it's not necessarily about knowing their personal matters. It doesn't matter whether they're married or what job they have or their health conditions or what they do. It should be just about who this person is personally. Do you like their personality? And it can be, you know, these are specific things. Now, the issue is you don't necessarily know what someone stands for. And this is where you can get into some issues. In a good circle of true friends, and you can have friends that are a dangerous circle of true friends, but in a good circle of true friends, each person stands for nothing more than who they are. They individually stand for who they are, and the other folks, the other people in that circle of true friends, supports them and defends them, even if they're in disagreement, because they can say, well, I agree that maybe hunting is good and there's nothing wrong with it. Another person may believe that hunting is bad, and that's okay, because we're true friends and I understand his position and I would defend his right to it or her right to it rather than have to force my position on them. And over time, these things are revealed, often accidentally on their own sake, meaning that we're not forcing our positions down anyone's throat. We're just enjoying their company. And the disentanglement of these relationships, the fact that we're not so intertwined in everything that they are, they make it a little bit more comfortable than these other relationships where you have to be intertwined. Now, in a dangerous circle of true friends, each person stands for who the group is. Everybody comes to a unified position, and it's dangerous, not bad. It's dangerous because often it's bad when a leader comes to a position in a group of friends, or a head honcho, or somebody in the lead takes a leadership role of that group, and the group then follows that person. Now, sometimes you can have a King Arthur type situation where you've got somebody with nobility, and honor in these military groups and battalions and squadrons. The leader will lead them to a positive place. In sports teams, you'll see that. The team captain, hopefully, is leading the team in a positive direction. But you can also get those teams where you get a bad guy at the top. And for those Walking Dead fans can understand, I am Negan. Where you get a group where everybody is Negan. I am Negan. And you've got a bad guy at the top. And everybody beneath him, for the sake of protection or for the sake of the group acceptance, is going along with the program. Neo-Nazis, other groups like this, where you get a group that they want that acceptance. And they're using this philia or this friendship as a replacement almost to family. And that's where you see the break, where people will choose their friends over their family, where they'll replace their storge love, their familiar love, because they're maybe not getting it with this friendship love, or they don't like, or they're getting a break, there's something going on, that they'll go to some other source for that support. And if you find yourself behind a bad leader or a bad group or a poorly motivated group of people, you can find yourself in a difficult situation. As I said, for the Walking Dead folks, you can find yourself in an I Am Negan group, where now you've lost your individuality and you've become Negan. You've become something other. You're only part of this group. Now, speaking about these groups, two is not the ideal situation for a friendship, particularly, because then quite often there's expectation and things and people become dependent. Three or more is better. Three to five, I'd say, is probably a comfortable amount for a group of friends where you can meet and you can bounce off of each other and nobody's locked to anybody else and one person can go and nobody's getting into any entrapment, which is one of these pitfalls of having this philia or this brotherly friendship, this friendship love. Fortunately, it should be the least jealous and the least demanding of the loves. It's almost free of self-interest. And that's another pitfall when you find yourself in a friendship where there is self-interest, where somebody wants to change you, wants you to behave in a way, they obligate you to some behavior. Now you're branching into other forms of love and other relationships where these things may be appropriate, but they're not appropriate in a friendship love. A friendship love, this brotherly love, should not be based on obligation or expectation of the other person. It should be the least demanding, but unfortunately, jealousy applies in all of these. And in spite of this strength, you can see that storge and eros are most associated with the scriptural sense of these relationships, where the Bible refers to God the Father and refers to the church. Christ is the bride or the groom of the church and the bridegroom, and we've got these romantic relationships, and then you've got the Song of Solomon, which is a very beautiful love letter. We've got these relationships that we see more often used in the Bible than these friendship relationships. But there is strength and there is significant power to having a strong group of friends. A strong group of friends is like being armed against influences from the world, from outside. When you get three or more of your guys together, it doesn't matter what the whole other place goes, you feel the strength. Three or more guys can take on 10,000 for the most part, as far as you feel when you're in these positions, because it adds strength. It's an exponential strength. It highlights, it defends, it endorses itself within your group of friends. It enhances the strength of your position of these hopefully like-minded individuals. The opinion of that group is going to have more weight than the opinion of thousands outside the group. If the whole world says something and you and your three buddies know that it's bullshit and you're going to say it, then they're going to, it's going to have significant strength for you. Again, it helps for a retreat. You can escape from public or other opinion into the group. Now, there is negative to that because, the coward can also retreat to a group of cowards and justify his behavior from running. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. You understand. I'm not going to get killed. Yeah, you don't want to do that. And there's strength in it. So it can be negative in getting these in groups, as I was talking about with the I Am Negan. A friendship can unite what is good in us amongst a group of otherwise evil people. So if you bring these friendships, say, for example, the mafia, or, you know, these different mobs that have, you know, they're committing crimes. They're up to no good. They killed people. They have evil inside them. But they come together in this group and they're loyal to each other. It ignites this loyalty. It unites this, you know, they're honest with each other for the most part. They're comfortable with each other. But in fact, they've come together for this evil intent. But this friendship is the goodness. It's the value. And we can see that's that aspect of the Mafia, the Godfather, Goodfellas that all of us look to and admire, is that unity. And it does unite what is good in us amongst a group of otherwise evil people. And you can see that, like, for example, the same person who would may die for their buddy, who may go to war, who may defend his mafioso or defend this person, would kill, you know, exterminate, massacre an entire village, would destroy an entire, if he had to, and do this great evil. But there's this kind of good painted as evil. And you'll see where people will. So it's very important that who you get behind and who you support in these friendships before you find yourself locked in. And that's why very often you'll see that these bad organizations, Al-Qaeda or, ISIS, will recruit at a very young age where their mind is susceptible, where they're looking for a replacement for that familial love, for that storge love. They're looking for something to fill in the gap, and they'll take that over and mask this philia, this friendship love, as this family type thing. And you will find honor and some nobility, and they'll feed off of that. They'll enhance that and make that, and you'll know that that's true, but you'll miss the actions that you're doing. You'll miss the intentions. You'll miss what you're actually, whether or not you're in alignment with some place you should be for the sake of this greater good or this greater feeling of loyalty or whatever. That will overcompensate. You've got to catch our back no matter what, no matter what we're doing, because you have this expected sense of loyalty that's only supposed to be with storge, that familiar type of relationship. It can raise the good in anything when you're in these groups to a higher exponent. It gets a multiplier. It's not an additive. Quite often what happens is it exponentially increases because of the strength of these good things, this loyalty and this camaraderie. These things can enhance. They are enhancers to whatever the mission is, to whatever the belief is. All right, well, we're going to do this. We're going to go do that. And this loyalty will make it appear as if it's something good, or this camaraderie will make it appear, and it won't even matter because I got your back no matter what. So it does take time, but there's good to it. To understand, really, a better way to say it is philia, friendship, can make brave men braver. It can make kind men kinder. It can make proud men more proud. And it can make cruel men crueler. You think specifically of a guy standing above a large group of people that he had gotten together with a small little mustache in Nazi Germany, World War II. It can make cruel men crueler because it defends these things that this ultimate leader, and you have to stay away from and steer away from having a leader in these friendships for the most part, who is dishonorable, who does not take you down the road you want to go, because it highlights and endorses the behaviors of the group, and it becomes something that may be an issue. And like I was talking about earlier, if we wanted to avoid danger, if we didn't want to go to war, you're going to go with the other cowards. You're going to find these individuals. You're going to try to recruit other people. If you wanted to partake in some bad behavior, like say you wanted to be unfaithful to your significant other, you would speak out with other people and try to get people to understand and get your side, even deceptively, to build a team. It's this negative team building where they take you down a negative road, and people will seek that. They'll lean on that so that in their mind, they can justify their behavior. They want to go get two or three other cowards to go cry in the corner. Well, there are those guys, and you know those guys that do that. That will do this negative team building so that they can use the strength of this philia love, this friendship, to allow them to justify their bad behavior. And also in the same regard, if you wanted to do something that would require some sort of courage or some sort of where you believe you were going to be rebuked. Maybe you had to speak amongst the crowd or make some point that was unpopular. You would want to have some friends with you catching your back so that when you said this, if the crowd to overcome that obstacle, it would make it much easier for you if you had two or three people to support you on any endeavor. But unfortunately, this can weaken our individual strength and our convictions. I've referenced that I am Negan thing where people will just follow along with the perspective of the leader. And that's where some people are leaders and some people are followers. And to be a good leader, you have to be a good follower. And that's the military's perspective on it. But it can weaken our own individual convictions when the people that we're in our group with are constantly bringing us, hitting us with their perspectives and their convictions and overpowering our own because, well, now there's two or three in our own little group that disagree with us. So we have a tendency to just go along with that. Friends give us moral support, hopefully, or immoral support, unfortunately. You get those guidance, and that's where you want to kind of focus, and you'll see that sometimes, you know, you got to figure out who's giving you moral support and who's giving you immoral support. And that specific nature, the importance of the fact that philia, this friendship, is irresponsible in its nature, meaning it does not have any obligation or responsibility to it. It does lend itself to a moral ambivalence. It puts us in a position because of that. There is no requirement to be a certain way or to behave a certain way, that we can kind of be free to do multiple things. So it's a very big risk for these group things. And we often find ourselves in a rebellion or a resistance to some things because of this moral ambivalence. People in these groups will often lean on their group, on the grouping, for their own sense of superiority or moral or genetic or otherwise. They'll say that people like to say when I'm in an argument with me, oh, well, you know, so-and-so agrees with me too. Oh, just so you know, everybody agrees with me. To give strength to their specific argument, they'll have this grouping of friends. They'll assemble this grouping of friends to catch their back and to get that, even though, in fact, all they're doing is just going along with the program, which is one of these pitfalls to this specific aspect of love. Now, as I said, if you incorporate that very love, the very love, the true love, that patience, kindness, understanding, selflessness, then you can get yourself and you can keep, hopefully, a pure, a good, positive group that you always go away feeling not just strong, because you always go away feeling strong for the most part, but you can feel true, you can feel good. And we know that loyalty to a good group has often led, so often led to goodness. While unfortunately, loyalty to a bad group has also led to evil. And we've seen these things. And that's why there's an issue with this concept of standing by our friends. This loyalty aspect, this loyalty that comes along with it, is often mistaken for absolute goodness or actual goodness. It is close. It is a powerful virtue, loyalty. But this loyalty to our friends under all circumstances is the problem. It's a kind of heroic loyalty that's often mixed with this corporate type perverse loyalty in which bad men will tie others to them into going after the wrong cause because one person or another believes in it or has some personal gain. And Nazi soldiers who volunteered to serve their country, these were men, soldiers that volunteered to serve their country because they loved it, but they ended up following this guy down a bad road and in fact may have given their life to a bad cause. They are not remembered fondly, these men. And there's kids, you know, teenagers that did not know what they were signing up for necessarily, could not know, but they volunteered to serve their country. And in fact, now their memory, what they've actually done has been tarnished. They have not done something good. They've done something evil. It's like this heroic perversion of being loyal to something that you should not be loyal to. Gang members, we see this. Go and kill. You got to do this. You got to do that. Everybody knows you're going down the bad road. But people want to be connected. They want to be connected. Unfortunately, friendship with these loyalties are so specific. And it can be very spiritually felt in these connections. And because of that, it can be very corrupt. It can corrupt the spirit because of the strength of this small group of friends, this camaraderie. It can unearth diabolical actions and do damage to the relationships that do matter. You can see specifically in gang behavior how getting a part of something that is down a bad road can destroy your familial relationships, your family life. They can put you at odds with your family. They can put you at odds with your romantic life, your significant other. And it can go on. It defies the strength of this relationship as it builds. Can defy mercy, justice, and I mean, they can even defy God, the strength of these things. And that's where these groups can cause specific problems. So we'll talk a little bit about the strengths and the pitfalls associated with philia, this brotherly love, as Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, this friendship is what it means. This, not companions, but this relationship that is beyond companionship and is friendship, where you genuinely enjoy this person. It should be free of responsibility. It should be free of obligations, but it should evolve to the point where that is these responsibilities and obligations are not so, but this behavior of taking care of people or feeling the need to take care of them comes naturally. Why? Because I like this guy. I like this girl. I like hanging out with them. I just want to hang out with them and I want to enjoy their company and talk, and we like to do the same things together. That's the strength of it. And when you can incorporate kindness, patience, understanding, selflessness, slow to anger, keeping no record of wrongs, and again, this agape love that I'll discuss in the fourth section here, which has to be incorporated into all of these relationships in order to bring them to their perfect fruition. To have a perfect friendship, you need to bring in this love. God is love, and love is patience, kindness, understanding, selflessness, slow to anger, keeping no record of wrongs, doesn't boast, doesn't envy, and we'll go into all of that in the fourth section and what that all means and why that's so important to bringing these things to perfection, to having a perfect family love, to having a perfect friendship love, and to having a perfect romantic love using these things together. So that's my talk on friendship love. Thanks again for coming along, and I hope that you'll join me on the next one. All right, bye.